Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Yeah, yes, Case. I literally, yeah, just got back in the seat. I think we got to adjust these brakes. They're I can't. It doesn't leave me nearly the time necessary to do any of the things we normally do over the years during breaks. Yeah. So we're gonna. I will work on that later this afternoon. Actually, I got a couple of things we gotta record. yeah, I'm sure everybody appreciates they can't. What is that? Is it 60 seconds? 70? How long is that? It can't be. It's not even. Is it 90? Yeah, not enough. It is 90. Okay, 90 seconds. All right. So if I know mentally, they used to be 2.5. So you get a lot of extra show. That's the nice part, right? all right. Let me catch up. We got that out of the way and. I don't want to talk about the international stuff because that was going to be Steve Anderson, and you know Steve is him and Marcus too, of course, and the two of them will survey, and I guess probably Nicole Russo will be the three that give you the divisions that involve most of the imports. And then, of course, we'll get Nick Luck. But when it came to the international races, we talked about with Andrew Hawkins, that was a lot of fun. And Chris Waller's very elegant, the crazy spelling. Did you see the way that that's spelled? Won the Caulfield Cup, and that was a very nice ride. This Mark Zara. Got the jump on Anthony Van Dyke, and Anthony Van Dyke was wide and very elegant. Was you know one or about a path and a half inside, and popped out at a perfect juncture to take control of that race. Very good. If you didn't, I'm pretty sure I retweeted that. And in the Everest, if you didn't see the Everest Classic. Legend, Karen McAvoy. This horse exploded to win the Everest. I mean, was about 2/3 of the way back in the field. And when they straightened, explosive turn of foot, to take control and win going away, in the Everest. I'm afraid that Santa Ana Lane. I don't know. I really barely got a call. So I don't know. Not going to be. I don't know. I get the sense that. What Gary Youngism, a couple of ticks past midnight. Is that the right? I don't know. I'm glad that there wasn't that this year that you know, we didn't have that charity event, and I would have not that you get to pick your horse, but. You know, I would have gravitated toward rooting for him because I had him last year, and that's that. You know, was really my in my introduction to him. He's had a nice career, but I don't, was he eight now? I think he's eight. So might not be. Speaking of veteran horses, going back to, I think it was Saturday. Was it Friday? Friday. Well, Bon Raison. How about Bon Raison winning at Keeneland? That fourth level allowance that came up, we were talking about with Marty. And 10-1. It was just a five-horse field. And gets up. Anna Bachisa boots Bon Raison home. Claimed at Saratoga. Went to Kentucky Downs and you know, didn't care for that experience. But Jack Sisterson puts him back on the main track, and Bon Raison for Calumet. Now, he's a five-year-old. Pretty cool. I can tell you right away what he got, because this was a, you know, serious field, Maniwa and so forth, and 98 buyer for Bon Raison, and career win 11. And that's close to his career best. His career best was 100, back when he was like a 3-year-old or early in his 4-year-old year. Amazing. And it'd been a while, right? Yeah, he hadn't win just a little under a year ago was his last win. And, I mean, he had been competitive. And, of course, he also had been, you know, running in tough spots. Bon Raison. Nice. I wanted to slip that in. The Valley View. This was also Friday, of course, the mile and a 16th on the grass. And Mike Maker for Paradise Farms and Parkland Thoroughbreds. Stunning Sky from way off and from near the back. And in fact, you know, it's funny. I guess maybe because in New York, we're just so used to these paces being, you know, never contested. It gets, you know, drive you crazy. But here's a race where you had a 10-horse field and there was real pace. 22-3, 46-1, 110-2. You know, you wish you could get this more often. Stunning Sky, and you know, Ricardo Santana Jr. riding here for Mike Maker. And one thing that when I looked at this on Friday, it surprised me how often Maker has used Santana. And you know, you'd think in a lot of cases that, you know, Santana and you know, his association with the Asmussen barn, that, you know, might preclude, but as it happens, Maker uses him, you know, not a ton, but he uses him the last 2 years, 35 times. And they've got a positive ROI. 14%. So call it, six wins in 35 starts going into Friday. And at Keeneland, Maker and Santana now are 3-for-5 the last 2 years. With a gaudy ROI, paid $1,380 here, and the ROI was $935 coming in. So two 8-to-1 shots, and now a 6-to-1 shot. that Santana has brought home for Mike Maker. And you, what is notable, 7-2 Stunning Sky, and did not get bet. Did not get bet. Floated up to 6-1. Duopoly ended up going off favored in here. And for Chad, and down inside with Gaffleone. Outburst actually set the pace with Florent Giroux. And that was kind of a reverse approach going back to the Florida Oaks win at Tampa. And I mean, she really has not been, ever since then, had really not been that competitive in the Teppan, in the Indiana Grand, and then she tried to shorten up in the Music City, and just has not, so they put her back on the lead. She didn't run badly. She ends up settling for sixth in here. Goes off at 7 and change, almost 8-1. And got beat 5 lengths. So this was a good race. And Stunning Sky, a declaration of war, bred by Stephen McDonald. And Stunning Sky, what's notable is that, you know, Parkland, if you think back to last year, and she was taken for $50,000, and then Parkland, from Parkland, and they bought back in somewhere along the way. So they get rewarded here because, you know, she'd been close. She'd been close in a couple of stake spots, including in the Lake Placid when she got beat ahead by Speak to Me of Summer. And she, of course, Antoinette got her, nipped her in the Saratoga Oaks, too. So she was kind of due for a stake success. So congratulations to everybody there. And another weekend for Declaration of War, who's had the last few weeks. If we went back, I think, a couple of weekends ago, right? Had a couple of, with the horse of, Clement. Gouffeau. The Declaration of War as well. So anyway, that was Friday. Slipped that in. And did we talk about Red Knight too? Yeah, we did. Red Knight, we talked about, that was Thursday. We talked about Red Knight's win, going back to Thursday, we can get our visit in with Dave Grenig here shortly. Way too much. And of course, a morning like this with the four trainer guests, everything, it's like a deck of cards that have been shuffled. And I'm going to have to go back and pull out some of the stuff. I wanted Dave to catch us up on his division. And of course, Dave does the juvenile, and we'll get his Breeders' Cup division thoughts. I'll save the Woodbine stuff for tomorrow as well. All right. Yeah. Okay. So you can call. Give Dave a try. See if he's ready for us. He said somewhere around 15 to 20. All right. Yeah. I didn't want to get started on something else without. I will mention this while. We get, I don't know if you saw, I think I retweeted it. Maybe I did, or if I just may have liked it, but there was a sequence yesterday at Keeneland, and Marty, I should pull up Marty's page, because there was kind of an unusual occurrence in the DRF selections that Marty pointed out, and I thought it was pretty notable. The three handicappers, Marcus Hirsch and Marty and Kenny Peck, there it is. The three of them, you know, they, for those of you that, you know, look at selection grid for DRF, you know, the bowl type, they'll be a, it's the best bet of any card. It just so happened that Marcus, then Marty, and then Kenny, that they each had a best bet in sequential races. Marcus in Love in the fifth, and this is at Keeneland, and then Marty's best bet was in the sixth, Inspector Frost, and Kenny Peck's best bet was in the seventh. All three won. Pretty terrific. I gotta say, and $9 for In Love, $6.20 for Inspector Frost, and $6.40 for Motigali. Motigali, Chad and Shadwell, and Inspector Frost, Brad Cox for Godolphin, and In Love, the Brazilian, Paula Lobo for Bone Chance Farm. So the pick three of the three best bets $77 make it. $77 for a buck. So good job. That's pretty cool. You know, because how often are the handicappers selections going to be, you know, like that, are going to be, you know, in order. No. Yeah, I know that, you know, the public handicapping environment is ripe with criticisms. The guys at DRF do an unbelievable job. Dave Grenig joins us from DRF, in fact. And Dave, did you see what I just talked about that Marty pointed out yesterday?
I did. That was pretty cool, because you're right. A lot of times that, you know, people, I've seen where we've had individual handicappers' best bets in the same race, like, and going up, you know, different horses going up against each other. And I kind of laugh at that, like, wow, I've actually seen where three guys had their best bet in the same race, and it was a different horse. But this was pretty cool that each one of them had a best bet that won in, like you say, in sequential order, where it resulted in a pick three, you know, if you played the best bets, pick three.
I love it. It's really very cool, and I'm always impressed, and people can't appreciate, you know, how much work goes into this, and, you know, Marcus, Kenny, and Marty, you know, they're handicapping, you know, how many cards a day, essentially.
Plus 48 to 72 hours out. I mean, like, the Thursday picks have to be in Monday. So I know this was a weekend that you're talking about. But so today these guys are handicapping for the Wednesday cards and the Thursday cards. And I know there aren't that many Wednesday cards anymore. But so, you know, after Keeneland, basically, there's not a ton of guys racing, of tracks racing 5 days a week. So now on a Monday, these guys are picking for Wednesday to Thursday. And, you know, you think you know the weather, but, you know, these weather guys, they're worse than the handicappers. So they're tough to get it right 72 hours out. And now the handicappers, and they basically have two choices, wet or dry. These guys have, you know, however many horses are in a race, it's, you know, it's more than two choices. So there's a lot of credit to these guys. Because I remember when I was a picker for the Post, and I got 24 hours out, and I could cheat a little bit. I could look and get an opinion from Lipton or someone, you know, whoever else was picking for the form, and then say, I didn't look at that horse, and I go back and look at him a little more. So
there you go.
Good stuff.
Yeah, Marcus is the lead on not just on on Keeneland, you know, which is obviously a seasonal meet, but Indiana as well. You know, Kenny, the lead on Monmouth, and you know, and then you know, sometimes we don't even know, you know, under the brand name, under the Hermes, and you know, the sort of anonymous in some cases, but we know Hermes is always Marty, actually. So Marty
is Kentucky,
yeah, and in Kentucky, that's right. Well, I was impressed, and
I was too. Very good.
People
stuff.
Should know. Well, there was plenty to be impressed about. I led the show, actually, with all the stakes action, Dave. I had to lead the show with Shug, and you know, Shug is you know, winning a race a day right now, and Performer's return was notable, but then also a pair of maiden winners. We just talked to George Weaver earlier as well about you know, his stake win with Lead Guitar, and he had a couple of maiden wins. You know, there's everybody's, you know, we're focusing on Breeders' Cup, but there's plenty of preps going on toward other assignments, including Performer, who's headed to the Cigar Mile.
Yeah, very, you know, very strong effort by Performer in, you know, watching the race, and the jock really didn't do a whole lot on him. You know, pushed on him a little bit at the 3/16, and he kind of opened up, and he ran, what, 133 and 4 for having not run in, since the Discovery, and we're talking about 11 months. It was funny, I asked him yesterday, I said, are you worried about the 6 weeks between, you know, the too much time between races, you know, between now and Cigar Mile? He goes, well, he just had 11 months. so no, there is no worry about that much time. It's been a frustrating year for Shug as it relates to Performer, because he had him in the Carter, entered, and then had a scratch, and just getting them back. This race was actually supposed to be, I think, a week or so ago. I think it was supposed to be the Monday, Columbus Day, actually. To be honest with you, I think it was supposed to be a week ago today, which might have made him eligible to make the Bold Ruler and then the Cigar Mile. But, you know, look, do this, the Cigar Mile, and then I believe you run him at 5, and hopefully you can keep him healthy and, you know, pick out some spots, because I don't know that he's necessarily limited to the one turn.
Well, it's nice to, you know, nice to get this kind of horse back. I mean, you understand when they get sidelined, but you know, that's a nice addition to the landscape, no doubt. Give us a couple of thoughts too, Dave, about we got plenty to talk about when it comes to Breeders' Cup, but how about some of yesterday's results and anything else from the past 4 days?
Well, sticking with Shug, I mean, you had, like I said, 10 for 10 on Friday. It was a nice second out maiden winner. I guess, potentially see him. I don't know. I guess it was a mile substitute. I don't know if he would run in the Nashua or just wait for the, you know, either the Remsen or the race at Kentucky. Maybe try and stretch that around 2 turns. It is Cortland, so I could see maybe a little bit of a push to go to Kentucky, but I really didn't get a chance to talk to him about what he might do with that horse. And then yesterday, the Cafe Society, the Empire Maker Filly was very sharp in her debut victory. So, like you said, he's got a lot to look forward to, short term and potentially long term. It was nice to see Tom Bush get a stakes win with Get Smoking yesterday. I'm sure it wasn't too nice for the people who had ticket on Decorated Invader at 2-5 or neither him singled in a pick, whatever. But just for the individual performance, you know, those connections, you know, things haven't been that easy for Tom lately, and he's tried. You know, he even admitted, you know, kind of like he hasn't really, you know, he's kept throwing his horse to the wolves each time because he thinks he's that kind, and he finally was able to hold on at the end and get the victory. He's not sure exactly what he's going to do with that horse next. There is the potential of going to California. You know, initially he was thinking, well, you know, I've done enough with him, and I can point to the races in Florida. And then in talking to him this morning, it's like, you know, I said to him, you know, I think the race in California is $300,000. I said the races in Florida are like $100 each. I mean, you'd have to run in 3 of them to get what you could potentially get if you run a horse in form now and then maybe give him a little extra time off. And he kind of agreed, but it doesn't necessarily mean he's going to put him on a plane and ship him, cross country at the end of November. So he's got options with that horse. Devamani and Olympico run 1-2 for Chad yesterday. Nice, useful horses. Horses that are geldings that'll come back next year and be tip money jars. You run in races like the Hillsboro or the Tampa Bay Stakes, something like that. Collette checks. I don't necessarily think they're going to be Grade One type horses, but it's great. That's why I have Grade Twos and Grade Threes.
We discussed it with him too, and it seems like seems like a horse that has got plenty of upside yet. And I don't know if you saw my tweet from yesterday. How interesting is it? And Bush has basically got the same size barn. He doesn't he doesn't have dozens and dozens, but he's had three graded stake wins since Get Stormy retired, and all three wins have come with Get Stormy progeny.
That is pretty cool. And he said, he did tell us he bought what made this one extra good, extra
yes.
special for him is I think he bought the full sister as a sale to this horse for
yes.
a different client, and so that client was equally as happy as the the folks representing the Sullivan stable now. It was a double word score type of victory for him.
The other rescheduled stake too. I haven't talked about the Knickerbocker yet, and pretty amazing. Five horse field, and you end up getting Chad 1-2, but the winner 7-2, 880 on Devamani.
Yeah, what was difficult about the race is trying to figure out how it was going to play out. There was no confirmed speed in the race. The one horse who looked like had the most speed was really a. That speed was shown on dirt, which was NYC for Todd. The one turf race that he had run in, which he ran well enough, it was from off the pace, and I think he got beat two necks coming in from third, coming from off the pace to be third. So I didn't really know how the race was going to shape up. Devamani, he tried, and Olympico, he tried Blinkers on last time in the lure, and it didn't work. But what he said, and I don't know if it was, how much truth you can, not truth, but how much validity there was to it, but if it maybe the Blinkers sort of sharpened him up a little bit for this start, because it enabled him to stay closer to the pace without them this time, and more willing for the rider to put him into the race, and then when he asked him to go, he obviously went. So I remember talking to Chad before the Manhattan about this horse, and he said, he had him for two starts and got two narrow defeats. I think one was at Tampa and then maybe at Belmont as well. And he said, don't dismiss this horse in the Manhattan. He said, I know he won it with Instill the Guard and he had other horses, but it's like, this horse is a pretty cool horse. And he was kind of high on this horse. Now, maybe the mile and a quarter proved to be too far, but, a mile and eight type horse, he's got himself a nice little grade two horse here. So, there's still, I'm still tire. There's still tread on that tire, and I think he'll get some useful races into him next year.
The rest of yesterday, I guess we can go backwards toward some of the Saturday action, and we talked to George, as mentioned, and Performer. There was also, I talked to George about that Texas Basin, the off-the-turf maiden winner. You really don't know what to make of that. And we did have, Dave, I suppose we should mention, the first few days of, we've had races off the turf, at least one race off the turf, the last four,
yeah, we
the
had,
last four cards.
Ten races off the turf over the last 3 days, which, we only had two going into that. So my numbers we've run 189 races for the meet so far. 89 have been on turf, and another 12 have been rained off. So if Mother Nature didn't butt in, we would have had over 100 races on the turf in what would have been, 19 days of racing. So over five races a day scheduled, and we've almost made it. Let's see, my math is really bad. 95 would have been 95. We've almost averaged five races on the grass anyway. So for the first 19 days of this 27-day meet, and it looks like we have some decent weather this week. And now they, just watching Breeze, we had about 40 breezers this morning on the grass. They pushed them back from yesterday to today. And, you know, it was definitely still yielding to good. And, you know, it was definitely kicking up, kicking up some of the quads there. So, but they're kept well out because of the dogs on traffic cones, by the way, known as dogs. So we'll, you know, there's still definitely some give in the ground, and probably will be for, you know, I don't think, you know, they may, you may see firm listed again at Belmont, but it's not the firm that, you know,
right.
It's not summertime firm.
No, exactly. I want to mention one other maiden winner that has gone maybe a little under the radar, and that was that Vacay from Friday. And I don't know if you noted this. That was a, I thought that was a, an okay, I mean, just a state bred, but another Not This Time debut winner. It's amazing.
He's been pretty good. I know that, you know, maybe Dale had a, Dale might be able to say he'll be the best stallion that he's ever had. I know he was talking about Dallas would be the best horse he's ever had. But that was, you know, he turned into a, you know, unfortunately the horse had his career cut short by injury, but this was a nice debut for this horse. I asked him, I saw Todd this morning, I said, should we reel this back, reel this horse back? And he goes, probably not. The only game up with an 80 or 52 number in the slop, but I hadn't really seen this horse train because basically he's got all Saratoga works after I think we left. I might have had him one day on the training. Labor Day, he worked a half mile, and I might have seen him that day. But other than that, I would not have seen the horse up until the time he ran it. But it's, you know, look, when you get Rapoli and Eclipse combining on a horse, there must be something, you know, something good about him. And
100,000.
It only costs 100,000. That's tipping money to those guys.
Well, other than that, let's shift our gears toward some of the activities that, you know, you talk about the turf works, but you were charting the last New York preparations for Tis the Law, who has now been, has already been photographed in Kentucky. Some thoughts about his send-off.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you, Steve. I was not here Friday for his last work. I had a previous engagement, so I was hoping that they would have taken. The only thing I saw was the horse come through the lane. I think they had a malfunction here. They were planning to tape the work, but it did not work out too well. I saw, you know, obviously his work up before that. And I thought his work before this was good enough. You know, he's getting there. I don't know if he'll get back to the Tis the Law, the summer Tis the Law, like the Travers Tis the Law, which I think he's going to have to be in order to, you know, have a chance to win the Classic. I'll be interested to see how he gets over the Keeneland surface. But he definitely has improved from right after the Derby to the time I saw him train, and, you know, which would have been, let's say, a couple of days before this last Breeze. He was definitely moving in the right direction. And would I say he's back to the summertime Tis the Law? I don't know that I would say that, but he's getting there. Now, whether he has enough time to get there to be spot on that he needs to be competitive in this Classic, I don't know. I guess the next 2 weeks will determine. But I know they're pretty happy. They're getting happier with him. And I think it's a good idea to get down there in time for two breezes and get acclimated to the surroundings and the consistent weather, whatever it's going to be there, as opposed to whatever the weather's going to be here. It should be the same, but it's not always the same. And maybe you do catch a wet track in the morning sometimes, and maybe it's a good idea to get him a gallop or two over a wet Keeneland track and see how he likes it. But you know, it's going to be a tall order, I think, against the older horses that he's going to have to run against, and again, authentic. So, you know, we'll see how the next 2 weeks go.
couple other New York topics, and then we'll do more Breeders' Cup, and we'll talk about your divisions and Philly and Mare turf for you and the juvenile, as always. And the news this weekend, I had this late this week, Dave, I had Joe Applebaum join us on Friday to flesh out some of the details, not just that purse increase, which is really nice, plus retroactive payments, but the Aqueduct schedule ended up being really robust. And I don't know if people, you know, once you get that close to the weekend, you start to, you know, focus on the racing. But if people didn't look at it, it looks like structurally, we got a nice winter ahead.
It's basically the same schedule that we've had, to be honest with you, Steve. You know, the winter basically starts, and we've sort of extended the fall meet by 1 week to encompass the first week of December. You know, I'd go back maybe 3 years ago, four. You know, Thanksgiving weekend was Cigar Mile, Remsen, Demoiselle, those races, and then you would come back and the winter meet would start first week of December. This new regime has sort of pushed it back a week. Fall meet now goes to try and give more time between the Breeders' Cup and the Cigar Mile, Remsen, Demoiselle, those types of races. Although, the two-year-olds, you typically don't get them coming back out of those races. But anyway, so the winter meet basically goes, you know, Cigar Mile day is December 5th. The Sunday after is December 6th. That ends the fall meet. Then we start up the winter meet on December 10th. We have 2 weeks there. And everything's basically 4 days a week from December, January, February, and then 3 days a week in March, which we've been for several years. There is one thing this year, there's a longer, quote-unquote, holiday break than we've had recently. It's we end on the 20th of December, and then we don't race again until the 31st of December. So that's a good nice little holiday/winter break. And then we start off on the 31st of December, and again, 4 days a week. December, you know, January, February, 3 days a week in March. Kind of, it looks like Aqueduct Spring is 11 days with a 3 day week due to Easter and then 2 4 day weeks. The big change there, I'd say, would be those used to be 5 day weeks. I guess the one area where I'm a little, I don't want to say confused, but I'm just puzzled a little bit by the fact that we have to rush to come back to Belmont. I understand, and I know it's a branding issue or that plays a role in it, that. You know, Saratoga outhandles Belmont, and Belmont outhandles Aqueduct. But to me, you have two great turf courses over there. One, I think that if we have good November weather, it's going to be super for the grass racing in November at Aqueduct, because we haven't used it in 11 months. And that's 18 days and maybe whatever you can spill over into December. Same thing on the flip side. I know, you know, you get the winter weather, does what it does to the grass, but you only have 11 days of racing on the turf there. And it seems like if you stayed an extra week or two, you could get more use out of the Aqueduct turf course, and then you wouldn't beat up the Belmont turf course as much, you know, toward the end of the meet. So I just think we should, you know, and you're going up against Keeneland and Derby Week anyway, so you might as well, you know, you're going to probably lose a little bit of business. You might as well just stay at Aqueduct anyway, but they don't want to do that. So we come back, I think April 23rd maybe, or April 18th maybe, the last day of the Aqueduct Spring meet, and then, you know, the end of that week, like the 23rd, we start at Belmont for April, May, you know, the end of April, May, June, and then whenever we stop. You know, there's been some rumblings. If you recall, obviously this fall, or, you know, after Saratoga, we had a week and a half break before Belmont ended. I mean, before Belmont started. I could see it potentially, depending on how the calendar falls, and I haven't looked that closely at 2021, maybe something similar leading into Saratoga. We'll have to see.
I completely agree about, you know, the effort that went into the second turf course and to utilizing it as much as you possibly can. It's and not to mention the fact that you actually get to have, you know, shorter turf sprints, and it, you know, it provides an opportunity that you don't, you know, that it isn't available to you too at Belmont, you know, from a distance standpoint. So I don't know. I like being over at Aqueduct, and I'm for for using that course, those two courses as much as possible. Well, still, I as I said to Joe on Friday, Dave, maybe it's because all I heard all summer was how truncated the winter was going to be. Oh, we're going to run 2 days a week, and we're going to be running for breadcrumbs. I mean, there was such a carrying on and teeth gnashing going on all summer about the winter season. Maybe I'm excited because it turned out to be equal to last year is good enough.
Yeah, you know what? I think to quote the mighty prophet Aaron Rodgers, I think people needed to just relax when it came to the prospect of no winter racing. I mean, you can't have. I know there was a high level management person who said it, but it wasn't the highest level management person, and it was said more out of frustration, out of like no wagering on track and no casino at the time, and just what are we, how are we going to get through Belmont? How are we going to get through Aqueduct Fall? And you can't just take the winter and just throw it away because it just doesn't, because what's going to happen is people might leave New York, and there's a good chance some of those people don't come back because they might realize that being in this location or that location out of another state and not having to pay as much in this or that might make them actually keep more of their money. So they're not going to come back if that's the case. So you need to have a winter program. Now, you need to work on embellishing the winter program. And to me, that involves getting Laurel, Merrill involved and Parks involved and sort of making some sort of circuit where each track takes a 2-week or more break at certain times, and then instead of discouraging guys from leaving, shipping, not leaving, there's a difference, shipping to the other locale, you encourage it and keep the flow going. And if the guy at Parks, there's no racing at Parks, then he has the option to go to Laurel or New York. Because the horses, you can write the races to make it fit. And vice versa, Parks, Laurel's closed, and the guy from Parks goes to New York's closed, and the horsemen here can go to Parks and Laurel if they have something to run at that time. Or they can just, rejuvenate their horses. We just got to give them a little bit of a freshening. But if you work together with those circuits, there might be a way to make it prosperous or more prosperous for all the circuits. But, to continue to race, let Laurel have the – Laurel has a niche on the President's Day weekend, right? Maybe New York doesn't need to run – that weekend and give that to Laurel, and then New York takes that February off, and maybe they can race 4 days a week in March, or if they want to take part of March off and whatever.
Interesting.
These guys can go through the schedule. I don't have time for that, but they can do it. And it just may make a little bit of sense to do it and then have more horses to draw from, because I'm a little, my concern with the winter in New York, obviously the money's good, but the trainers are creatures of habit. They go to Florida, they go somewhere else because of weather, which is just kind of silly to me. You're running a business. You go where you can try and make money. And if the purses here are dwarfed, the purses at Gulfstream or Tampa or Fairgrounds, and I'm not saying, I don't know what the Fairgrounds are, then you need to stay here and just go outside when you have to go outside. And after you saddle your horse, you go inside and it's nice and warm. And then your owner, who wants to live in Florida or wherever, you can watch it on a nice big flat screen TV, and then just send them the check that you make, because it's going to be bigger than the check you're going to get from somewhere else. So, from a business side, it makes sense to have. I was talking with the trainer this morning. So if you're going to have dirt horses in your stable, in your barn, you need to be in New York in the wintertime because it's a little bit, the competition's easier, and the money's better. And it's just simple math. Now, I get it. I understand the cost of living is higher. I understand the workers' comp is higher. They're making strides on some of that. They're not making, they're not there, all the way there where people would like to be. But look, they're New York, in addition to the purses, they're continuing that program where if you finish fourth through last, you get a $300 credit towards your jockey's insurance fund. So there's a good chance that by staying here in the wintertime, you can, look, nobody wants to run fourth through last continuously, but if you don't get a top three prize, fourth through last, you get that, whatever that money is, plus your $300 credit, you'll pay for that part of your insurance without having to put a dollar in your pocket. I mean, there are benefits here. And, you know, I think the horsemen need to look a little deeper than just, you know, what am I running for? There are other ancillary things here that are that make it attractive. I understand Aqueduct's not, you know, there's not palm trees and sun and there's no beach, but we could put sand somewhere if you'd like. but there's, you know, it's not a bad place to run in the wintertime. You can be competitive and you can attract some owners, too, because if they see you winning in New York, you know, those months, they might give you a shot in the other months, too.
Well, I mean, there's a bunch of things that I just completely concur. For instance, that, you know, that program during the winter, I mean, we happen to have some horses that are much more turf oriented, Kid Chocolate and Minute Mouse specifically. And over the years we've had them, I'm looking up, there's Williams Lucky Gray, who was a turf horse, but she won a race at Aqueduct in February, which was a complete surprise. And, you know, basically, you know, they would get maybe 45 days between, you know, the end of grass season at Belmont or at the end of grass season at Aqueduct, let's say 1st of December. And then by about mid-January, early February, they'd run a couple of times, 2 to 3 times for fitness and to be ready when the turf would show up at the end of March or early April. And it, you know, by having those kinds of programs, it makes it worth sticking around. I mean, it helps pay the bills, while the horse is just sort of, you know, getting a little bit of a freshening, just, you know, doing some walking and just, you know, just light jogging and whatnot, between seasons. So I'm all for it. We've got a horse down in Florida, but, for the most part, you know, they'll just stay in New York and look forward to, you know, whatever opportunities. So I agree with everything that you lay out. And speaking of some people that are coming to New York, how about the Carl Broberg establishing a barn?
That was interesting to see that he had a horse entered in the stakes. And it's funny, I texted him. I said, "Hey, yeah, like to talk to you about it." He goes, How about we wait until I have a horse with a chance? I said, well, I said, the fact that you're here is noteworthy enough. I said, we'll get to those as well when you're running horses with that have a chance. But this is good. We need him to come in there, and we need, you know, he'll add some. He's very active at the clay box and would like to be more active here. So it'll be fun to see how he does. And I believe he's hired, and I'm terrible with his last name, but Ocala, the assistant, longtime assistant for P.G. Johnson. I believe he's running the show here for Carl.
So how about that?
So he's got someone with New York experience helping out, and that's kind of cool to see. And I hope that I hope he has a little bit of success here. And, you know, you look at who he claims off of, and he claimed one off. Just looking at his recent claims, he claimed 3 at Keeneland, 1 off Asmussen, 1 off Gargan, 1 off Catalano, all maidens. I don't know if they won, but I'm just looking at what he's done. And, you know, maybe those horses, they show up here. So, you know, it'll be fun. It'll be fun to see how he does. I know his first starter didn't run any good, but he didn't expect it to.
Well, he's got 2 in on Thursday. He's in the 4th with Creative Plan, and he's in the 7th with Attentive. And so far, they're using Kendrick Carmouche on all 3 of the entries. And, you know, right there, that tells you all you need to know. Broberg is a bit of a flashpoint character, and certainly has got, you know, the tractors. He's out there. He's out there for anybody to talk to on Twitter. He seems like a major character. That I can sense. So he may be a bit of a drink stirrer. I think he'll.
Oh, you're on satellite radio, Steve. You can say it.
Well, he's. I don't know. I, you know, we've, you know, certain guys like him have tried to come. I mean, Diodoro's had mixed success, right? He's had some success, but I know this summer he basically packed up with a couple of weeks. He said, "I can't win here right now." He said, I don't have the horses to win here," and he basically packed up and headed out of town. So it'll be interesting to see. I mean, how he does.
I agree, and I agree. We'll see what kind of horses, you know, what kind of horses he's able to claim and how well they do, and it'll be fun to watch.
There you go. Well, let's turn our attention to your Breeders' Cup divisions. Let's start with the juvenile, Dave, and get to the latest on the lineup. What are you sensing, and give us some of your top storylines.
Yeah, it hasn't really changed that much, although my colleague Steve Anderson did report that...
the Miller horse.
Yeah, Get Her Number, the horse that won the American Pharoah, is not going to make the race. So, and then my other colleague, Mike Welsh, told me that Boca Boy, the Florida Stallion Stakes winner, will not supplement. So I'm on the hunt for another horse. I know that Dale Romans would like to run a recent maiden winner called Smiley Sabatka.
We talked about him the other day.
So we'll see. If he, you know, I would think he'll get in. Again, if I'm not, I guess it really depends on what horses I'm sort of missing. I know that if you go on the Breeders' Cup website, they added Upstriker, I believe, Ron Moquette. It was worth
yeah.
to check with him. It was actually a semi-interesting horse, I guess it's from Japan, that was listed on their website. I'll tell you who it is just a second. I don't know if he comes either, but look, the race is pretty much, you know,
Jackie's
the showdown between Essential Quality for Cox and Godolphin and Jackie's Warrior for Askeson and the Robesons. I mean, it's really, I think the gap between those two is fairly significant. I did write about last Friday, Ron Bauer for Mike McCarthy, who I believe will be in with a puncher's chance. I mean, if you're looking for someone to upset the top two, I think that, you know, if those two, not only are they the best horses in the race, they also may be the ones with the most early speed. So if they get hooked up early or start attacking each other early enough, to me, the best closer is Ron Bauer. I think one of the more interesting notes is you have multi-juvenile winners, Bob Baffert and Todd Fletcher, with horses that are going to come in kind of under the radar. Baffert has Spielberg, who's yet to win, but has run fairly well in his races. Not so well in the American Pharoah, but Bob has had time to work on that, and we'll see what he gets done. And then Todd's going to run Likeable, a recent maiden winner. A little out of character for him to just throw a horse from the main ranks into a juvenile, but you know, I know Rapoli owns part of this horse, and I believe he owns it with Vinny Viola. I have to double check on that. But I think, interesting, those two, though, Jackie's Warrior and Essential Quality keep it quite interesting. Let me see where it's Likeable here. Likeable is Rapoli and St. Elias, yes. And there's another one, you know, as well. Chad said this morning that he wants to see Reinvestment Risk Breeze this weekend before he makes a final call on whether to go or not. And then that Japanese horse I was mentioning is a son of Spikestown, actually a Kentucky-bred son of Spikestown named Ascalon, who won a maiden race going 6 furlongs on the turf and then was 15th out of 16 in some turf stake at in Japan. I don't know if that horse comes or not. Another guy I need to check with is Danny Pish, with a horse called Huntsinger, who won the Kip DeVille Stakes at Remington Park. He's on their list. He's on the Breeders' Cup website as a potential juvenile horse. But, again, it's really top-heavy with Essential Quality, Jackie's Warrior, and then I think Ron Bauer is definitely in with a puncher's chance. Ron Bauer will be ridden by Javier Castellano in the juvenile.
Nice. And I'm just looking at my list to see any potential. I know that Superman Shaq Miller is looking elsewhere for him.
Right.
Kelly Breen, Picking Time?
Yeah, he worked that horse this morning. I didn't see it. I think I was on my way over to the training track when he worked him on the main. The horse is, he told me this morning, 50, before the work, 50-50 to go. He looks to be a cut below at this level. To me, he's a horse I would go Remsen, Nashua Remsen with, but that's me. We'll see what the owners want to do there. But, you know, he did win a sprint stake at Smoke Lacking at Monmouth Park. He did try the Saratoga Special in his second career start. Was no match for Jackie's Warrior. Not that anybody was that day, but he was 8th of 9, beaten 18 lengths. I'm not sure that he's made up that much ground in the last 2 weeks. Now, the interesting thing here, and I don't know if this is right or not, shows that he's run on Lasix in two races at Monmouth. So is that, is that possible? Or, he obviously wouldn't be able to run on Lasix. And I'm just looking at his PPs. It says an L for those two races. And I guess Monmouth is not holding the Lasix free races. Is that accurate? That you know?
I don't know, but I would imagine that's easy enough to confirm. Interesting.
Right. So that would be maybe. Now he did win without Lasix when he debuted. But then it shows Lasix for the races on the 8th, the 6th of September and 27th of September. And I just kind of noticed that right now.
Speaking of,
he would not be allowed to run on that medication in the Breeders' Cup.
No. And speaking of Diodoro, by the way, Dreamer's Disease and Keep Me in Mind, either or?
I think either or. I need to check with him as well. Keep Me in Mind, because he was second in the Breeders' Futurity, seemed to be the one he was leaning towards. I did look at the work tab, didn't see the actual works, but both of them worked over the weekend, and Tumor's Disease, I think, had a 59-2 bullet, and Keep Me in Mind worked a half in 49-1. So we'll see. I have to go back and check yet. 59-2 for Dreamer's Disease on the 17th, which was Saturday, and Keep Me in Mind worked on Saturday as well, half mile. So I believe one of the two will run. I would think, because Keep Me in Mind was second in the British Futurity, that he would be the one, but he is an eight.
I can also tell you that I just checked with Ron Moquette, who says they are leaning toward running Upstriker.
Okay. And I've also, I can potentially add him to my list. And I have another call to make to see if there's somebody else. I just don't want to say it because I don't want to, I just don't know. If he's not going to run.
There you go. That's fine. I've got one other, too, actually, that's on nobody's other list. I don't know why I have it necessarily. What about Ryan Hansen with Weston?
I believe that was announced by my California colleagues that horse was getting put away
for the winter.
All right. For the winter. I thought one of my California boys had written that he was off, getting a break.
All right. Well, and what we'll do, Dave, we'll probably talk on Friday, and we'll go through your other division, which is the Filly and Mare Turf. But I will, having had Graham Motion on earlier, we talked to Graham and covered off Mean Mary. Harvey's Little Goyle, how serious do you think Mott is about running her?
Very serious. I talked to him yesterday. I believe he is quite serious about running that horse in the race that he can get. He told me he wants to check out what Euros are coming, and I got a few more names for European-based horses that might be heading this way. None of them that weren't looked to me to be overly, too tough. And if Tarnawa goes to, it's interesting, the Breeders' Cup website, they took Tarnawa off the, no, they didn't. That's my mistake. Tarnawa could easily go in the mile and a half range.
Right.
Just as easily. And I guess a lot of the key is what does Aidan O'Brien do, what do you make of Magical's race on Saturday there in Europe? Does she come for the turf? Does she come for the Filly Mare turf? Does she come at all? Not sure. So I think between Magical, Tarnawa, those are two top contenders. If neither or only one of them shows up in the Filly Mare race, then maybe it kind of sways Harvey's Little, Mott to run Harvey's Little Goyle. But he kept the horse in Kentucky. Most of his other Breeders' Cup horses are here. He's got them all over the place. He's got two in Belmont that worked over the weekend. Tacitus is still here, I believe, and Horologist is up in Saratoga. And then he left Harvey's Little Goyle at Churchill Downs.
Well, and speaking of some of the decisions, and we'll check in probably with Nick Luck later in the week, I guess Gaiath has been injured and retired.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting to know there.
I just that was somebody that would is this floating around out there? Yep, retired to stud. And Godolphin announced an hour ago.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and so it really, we've actually lost quite a few between him and Love and Pinatubo No and Batash No and been a wrath of yeah. I just I'm starting to. I'll go through my list today and keep updating them, and we will keep checking in with DRF correspondents on their respective divisions. Dave, I appreciate this. You got a lot of ground covered.
Okay, sir. Good to talk to you.
Dave Grenig, everybody. DRF Grenig on your Twitter. And there we go. I guess we're done. I hear music. So right now, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. About a dozen for the juvenile as it stands right this minute. Thanks to Dave and Graham Motion, Tommy Bush, George Weaver, Craig Lewis. Is that everybody, Case? I guess that was it, right? Am I missing? No? Lewis, Weaver, Bush, Motion. Grenig. There it is. Tomorrow, Michael McCarthy. We almost had Nick Gonzalez. I'm trying to get Nick. And we're going to maybe try. We may have to tape something with Nick because he really doesn't get done till after 12. And so I do want to get him on. It's been a few years since we've had Nick Gonzalez, and that was a big win for him and his team yesterday. So Andy tomorrow and Steve Anderson, Michael McCarthy and more. Good luck if you're playing today. They're off the turf in Indiana. Be looking at Indiana later in the week too. And tonight, Presque Isle, the stake today, the HBPA. Replay 6 to 9 here on Sirius XM. Website for archive and pod. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you tomorrow.
It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
From BRL Equine, the people that bring you EPO Equine, Unlock and Bleeder Shield, now comes Flexify HA, the most advanced scientifically based joint supplement on the market. To find out more, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880. To be the best, give them only the best. BRL Equine.
Our Pennsylvania breeding program was, of course, impacted by the pandemic. Now, with our country getting back to work, we'd like to again talk about our program, the best in North America. Our breeder awards will remain up to 50% for PA-sired PA breds. Owner bonuses will also stay at up to 40%. Restricted races will again be run at all three PA tracks, and PA Day at the races will return. I'm Brian Sanfratello. For more, please visit PABred.com.